Episode 39, NFL Draft Podcast.
What's up, Rob?
How you doing, Stan?
I've been better.
You've been better?
You know why I've
Something been better? Chapping your thighs?
A little bit.
Yeah, I just, before you bring it up, I want to say to my father, I appreciate all the nice things that you've been commenting on, but we're a team here, we're not in competition, so I don't know why he would be so nice to me.
And then wait, was that your dad?
No, it wasn't really my dad. you would think it had to be, right? Like, I was very biased.
I want to read it. I want to read the whole
thing. We love when you review our show.
Yeah, thanks for that. Thanks. You know, yeah, absolutely.
I'm glad that you're listening. Yeah. I don't care if you like me or hate me, but
this B Mahar 3 on May 11th.
Wait, B Mahar 3.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening.
No, yeah, thanks for listening. However, I'm going to read this comment. Rob is solid, has some decent analysis, but Stan is terrible, have no idea. By the way, run on sentence, right there. Stan is terrible, put a period there and start the new sentence. I have no idea how he is covering the draft for a living. Well, B. Mahar, joke's on you. I don't cover the draft for a living. I do so many other things, one of which is work in a restaurant, and I'm terrible at it. So if you're going to bash me for anything, bash me for not being able to carry more than two plates at a time.
Listen, I'm going to come to my man Stan's defense here. I am, you know, not doing it for a living, but, you know, if I could scrape together a few dollars for covering the draft all year, I'll scrape together a few dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Stan is an excellent podcast producer. He's done many podcasts before. He's done many radio shows. He watches 10 times more college football than I do. I watched maybe 8 college football games all of last season, and then I picked the guys I wanted, and I just watched cut-ups of their plays. Like, I think I might be overselling it at 8. I might have watched like 4. I sat down and watched the college football game.
Not to mention, I also watch high school all-star games.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm crazy.
You want to get someone who knows their stuff when it comes to college football, NFL, NBA? Stan's my guy.
Thanks, Rob.
Stan's my guy. And he knows plenty about the draft, even if I make fun of him for caring too much about Miami players.
That's probably what he should have done. Like, yeah, if you're going to bash him about anything, you should have bashed me about
he's like
caring too much about Miami.
I mean, if the criticism was eloquently stated as, how come Stan did not watch a single snap of Solomon Thomas, but knew everything there is to know about Danny Isadora? Like, he feels like
Elder.
Yeah, I feel like he's not properly like spacing out his draft knowledge. It's like, well, that's Stan's prerogative. And I'm here to watch Solomon Thomas, even though I have to say, like, I was a little bored by him. I probably only watched like 3 games of Solomon Thomas.
That's 3 more than I did. Which is a good transition to what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about offensive and defensive lines and the guys that have the chance to start and contribute right away.
That is correct. That is correct. We are going to just pick out a few guys. Really, I'm looking at offensive linemen who have a chance to start.
Mm.
This was a really bad draft for offensive linemen. We didn't see one go until the 20th pick, which is absurdly, absurdly low considering, you know, top tackles are usually, you know, top 10 picks.
Yep.
And then we're also going to look at defensive linemen, not pass rushers really, like more of interior defensive linemen, guys that are going to play hands in the dirt, who can find a rotation early on in their career as a rookie.
According to B. Mahar, that's going to be decent from you.
I'll give you some decent analysis.
I'll be terrible.
Stan will be terrible. Stan will likely be terrible.
Yeah. But, you know, maybe our decent and terrible analysis.
Let me tell you something. We are about to get one hell of a scouting report of Danny Isadora.
I'll tell you right now, it's gonna be very in depth.
I'm excited for it. And you know what? Let's start with not specifically Danny Isadora,
but
the Vikings.
Okay.
No, I'm kind of looking at it as a team by team. The Vikings, in terms of offensive line and defensive line, they got guys right away that I could see coming in and being part of the rotation. They had a terrible offensive line last year. One of the worst in the league, probably a bottom 5 unit. So they signed, they got rid of, let Matt Khalil go. They signed Mike Remmers. Who else did they sign?
Zeitler? No. No, yeah.
Brown sounds either. So, see, this is what we were terrible. See, we're both terrible.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
So they signed Mike Remmers to play tackle. They signed Riley Reiff to play tackle.
That's right, yeah.
And they drafted Pat Elflein out of Ohio State.
And Danny Isadora.
And Danny Isadora out of Miami. And you know what? I think that both of those players, I think Danny Isadora, first of all, was way underdrafted. I thought this guy should have been a third-round pick, maybe a fourth-round pick, as a guy who he should be able to start for them as a rookie.
Yeah.
Especially considering how bad their offensive line is. I don't know if they're going to go replace four positions on the offensive line and leave Alex Boone. But theoretically, they could go Riley Reiff, Danny Isadora, Pat Elflein, Alex Boone, Mike Remmers, and try to completely remake the line in 1 year. What do you feel about Danny Isadora, first of all? I think that he is talented enough to start, probably will struggle, and I don't know if he has the upside to be more than a three- or four-year starter and somebody who eventually you'd like to move to a backup role. What do you think?
All right. So I'm going to try to be as objective as possible.
Danny Isadora is the greatest player.
Well, yeah, obviously, right? No, I'm not going to do that. I had notes going into the draft, and I think I still have some of them.
You're too busy being terrible.
Yeah, right. Which is excellent analysis of me, by the way. But no, I think as a pulling guard, I think he's really good. I think he can build enough momentum to move people. In the running game. In the passing game, I mean,
could be a struggle.
It could be. He's you know what it is though? He does have a wide base. So he could if he got stronger, he could hold his own. His feet aren't great. Especially if in pass protection. He's an athlete. I'll put it that way. He's an athlete. He's got good size. He's got decent speed. Like I said, I think he's best suited in the run game. Had he been drafted when they had Adrian Peterson, I'm sure it would have helped. Being from Florida, and I know him and Dalvin Cook have. I'm sure they've known each other.
Is this the part of the podcast where you get angry that the Miami Hurricanes didn't get a Florida recruit like Dalvin Cook to come to their school?
No. This is the part where I say that these guys all know each other. I'm sure that Isadora and Cook are aware of each other. And now he'll be blocking for him. So I think Isadora is good in the run game. I'll put it that way. I think he's a liability in the passing game, though.
I think that is excellent analysis. You sound like you really know what you're talking about.
I mean, listen. If this was a Miami Hurricanes draft podcast, I think B. Mahar 3's analysis of me would be much better. So. But you know what though? I think Minnesota's offensive line is. I mean, it's improved because it couldn't have gotten worse. So
Definitely couldn't have gotten worse. And I think Pat Elflein is a guy who
I liked him.
See, I kind of hated him, and it's just because I think he's going to be a slightly below average pass blocker and a slightly below average run blocker.
Okay.
And you put those together and you have a guy who's not really a travesty and doesn't really kill you in either way, but I feel like he's just a guy that he's just going to be like nobody's going to care about him in 3 years.
Yeah.
He's not going to move anybody off the ball, but he's not going to he's not going to let somebody bust a gap and for a tackle 5 yards in the backfield.
He's a body.
He's a body,
which is fine.
Which yeah, it is fine. And you know what? It's unusual to be a body in both areas of the game.
Right.
I mean, most players excel at one area, bad at one area, or even excel at one area and are below average in one area. But he is just good enough to get by at both, and I think that kind of makes you good enough to come in and start right away.
Right.
He's what I like to call an adult. Yeah. And that doesn't mean that just because he's over the age of 18 or 21. When I say adult, he's a man who will show up to work and know his responsibility.
He'll do his job to
the best of his ability.
Which might not be great.
It might not be great, but over the last 4 years, I've seen a lot of messes out there at every position. And going from a complete mess to how I politely call an adult, it could be a huge improvement. On the defense, while we're here, I don't even care about the defensive line. Let's do some more offensive linemen. Obviously, Garrett Bowles has a chance to start right away.
Oh, yeah. I think he comes in and he's the guy.
Ryan Ramczyk has a chance to start right away. But he also has a chance. The line, he's good enough to start right away. He's talented enough to start right away, whether they want to put him at guard or right tackle. Teron Armstead for the Saints is not moving off that left tackle spot. One of the guys we never talk about, but has just been phenomenal for quite some time now in New Orleans. But Ryan Ramczyk, on most teams, high floor guy who should be able to start. I think more interesting, those were the two first round guys. I think more interesting, a couple early second round guys. Not early, I guess. Forrest Lamp, the early second round guy I'm talking about. See, I don't know why B. Maher thinks I'm so good. And I'm fumbling over my words.
He said here. You're decent. So maybe that's what it
decent.
Is.
Decent.
Yeah.
Well, forget. You know what? Now I feel more in the zone now because I have a lower bar to pass. Forrest Lamp, who I thought was the best offensive lineman in this draft, probably the only offensive lineman in this draft that I think has Pro Bowl potential. I think it's a slam dunk that he's starting for the Chargers. Dan Feeney, who I kind of think more along the lines of Pat Elflein, a little bit more solid, and I think he has the ability to play guard or tackle.
He's more of an adult.
I think he's just no. He's the same amount of an adult, but he's got a little bit more strength and the ability to hold up one on one and actually push people around. Even if he's not, his consistency is just as big of a problem as Elflein. But I think he does have a little bit more upside. The Chargers released guard Orlando Franklin, who was on a pretty big contract.
Also a former Hurricane.
Apologies. But I think that you'll see Forrest Lamp and Dan Feeney both starting for the Chargers on an improved offensive line this season.
There's more, right? Cam Robinson, what do you like? I think he's another guy. I don't know how you feel about him, but I think he's got a little bit of potential to be a Pro Bowler. I think he's got the skills. He's got the skills, and I think if he can put it all, especially if he plays guard, I think if he puts it all together, he can. I don't see why, if he put it all together, he wouldn't be a Pro Bowler.
I think for the Jaguars and Doug Marrone, who is an offensive line guy, I think it's a great fit there because I think Marrone, or at least I hope Marrone, will find the spot that suits him. I think that he does have some upside as a left tackle. Although, as a prospect, I dinged him for the horrible, inconsistent play. But I hope Marrone, if Marrone doesn't think it's going to work out at left tackle, moves him to right tackle or guard, and just finds a spot for him. I actually have a piece that, by the time this episode is published, should be available to read. And it's about Greg Robinson and how grossly misused he was for the Rams. I get it, the Robinson thing. Is just a coincidence here. I get that Greg was the number 2 overall pick, but he was kind of similarly thought of as Cam Robinson. He's a great run blocker. He didn't have a lot of chances to pass block because of the offense. It's not a total one for one. And obviously the upside with Greg Robinson was much higher. He was a super athlete. And when you talk about pushing people around in the run game, I mean, they pushed people around in the run game. He started off at left guard. I think it was left guard. He played really well early on. Jake Long got injured after about 5 games. Greg Robinson moved to the left side and just got demolished at tackle for 2.5 consecutive years. And now they're moving him to right tackle, where I feel like he's going to continue to struggle because he was constantly holding. His feet were never fast enough for a pass set, and he's probably going to go up against better pass rushers on that side, even though it's not the blind side. I imagine the holding penalties will keep coming. Grossly misused. Cam Robinson, similar in type in terms of you don't know where along the line he's going to play, but he has tremendous physical skills and should be able to be utilized as a run blocker, if nothing else. I think Doug Marrone will use him right. I think you're right. He does have a chance to start, and I wouldn't have picked him over Bowles or Ramczyk, but I wouldn't be totally surprised if he ends up playing guard but having a better career than both of them.
I always go back to the Texas A&M game. Yeah. He did a very good job against Myles Garrett.
He did. It was one of his better games of the year. And he really kind of just... I know Myles Garrett was playing through injuries at times this season, but Myles Garrett can make anyone look bad, and Cam Robinson didn't allow that to happen. Speaking of guys that Cam Robinson, Myles Garrett made look bad, Connor McDermott was one of two offensive tackles that the Patriots took. The Patriots had a very simple draft, four picks. Athletic pass rusher, athletic offensive tackle, athletic pass rusher, athletic-ish offensive tackle, as athletic you can get with the 211th pick. Connor McDermott was abused by Myles Garrett. Antonio Garcia, a little bit undersized. Do you think either of those guys has a chance to be a starter down the road for New England? They don't need a left tackle or right tackle now, but because the segue was perfect, I'm going to ask you.
Down the line, sure. I think anytime...
anytime New England gets an offensive lineman, exactly. You think they could turn him into something, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Antonio Garcia turns into a tight end at some point. Like, it wouldn't surprise me. So
nothing surprises me.
Right, but... had they been drafted by any other team, I think they'd be out of the league in 3 years.
I'll tell you what, I don't totally disagree with you. Antonio Garcia, I see the potential, but I just kind of don't see how, I don't see the path to him getting better. Another guy that's kind of like that, even though some people swear he's going to be a great guard, Deion Dawkins in Buffalo. It's because he kind of doesn't have enough weight, might not have enough strength, he's an athletic guy. He looks, I don't know, I can't put it together in terms of seeing him really blocking and moving NFL defensive linemen off the ball. But the Bills picked him with a 63rd overall pick, and could he find his way into the starting lineup as a rookie at either right tackle or one of the guard spots? I think it's tough.
Yeah. I think he could.
I think I would feel better if Anthony Lynn was there, because I think Anthony Lynn's mastery of the running game.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know what Sean McDermott's going to do in terms of what he's going to let his offensive coordinator call, what kind of scheme they're going to install. It's a tough one, because I think that Deion Dawkins is one of those guys who can go in one of two very different paths. In terms of a couple guys who are drafted a little bit later but have a chance to shore up the guard spot, I really like Isaac Asiata going to Miami. I think that, you know, low ceiling player, but I think he's got a lot of strength in the run game, and considering Laramie Tunsil is going to move to left tackle full time, they needed to replace that production. They replaced it in a different way, obviously, Laramie Tunsil being a whatever he actually went in the draft, he was a top five talent, legitimately, whether it's at guard or tackle. I think Asiata, his strength inside, could be nice for Adam Gase if he's employed in a certain way. I think Nico Siragusa in Baltimore. I think he was a tackle in college, but he probably played guard
at San Diego State. He played all over the offensive line. He played a little bit of center too. No relation to Tony.
Is that true?
That's what I heard. I thought he was related, but somebody said that he wasn't.
I'm going to look it up in a minute. Mm-hmm. And if he is related to Tony Siragusa, I'm going to comment that you're terrible and you don't know what you're talking about.
I went back and forth on it. I thought he was and I thought he wasn't.
I think he has a chance in Baltimore to fill in that role. No, I'm going to look it up. You don't have to look it up.
Yeah, all right.
Marshall Yanda is still one of the best guards in the league, but they have room to find a guy in that other spot, especially if they're considering moving someone to right tackle to replace Ricky Wagner. Cleveland, they got great players there. Joe Thomas, Joel Bitonio. Who the hell's the center? Oh, J.C. Treader. J.C. Treader. No, Alex Mack on the Falcons. You don't know what you're talking about. You're terrible.
You're right. Oh, man.
J.C. Treader, they just signed, and they just signed Kevin Zeidler. So 1-4, they are great along the offensive line. And that third spot, they don't know what they're doing. Could it be Cameron Irving filling in that spot? Florida State guy. Could it be Sean Coleman, the former Auburn tackle, who I really liked his potential coming out of college. They drafted Roderick Johnson this year, who's one of the most maybe the most talented pass blocker in this class. Oh, not pass blocker, tackle in terms of athleticism as a pass blocker and ability as a run blocker. But he was simply terrible for Florida State. With his upside, do you think he has a chance to win that job as a rookie at right tackle over former teammate Cameron Irving? and, you know, high upside guy Sean Coleman.
Well, just like you, I was high on Irvin coming out too when he did. I just think I don't think he'll win it out over as a rookie. I think he does have the upside to win the job eventually though. Not as a rookie. I think that's a tough task.
I'm about to tell you the name of Nico Siragusa's father.
Okay. Is it also Tony?
And it is. Ramon Siragusa. Stan,
you know. Not terrible.
You know what you're talking about.
Not terrible.
You are not terrible. You are not terrible. Do you have any other guys you wanted to... Wrong sheet here. Any other guys you wanted to pick out that you wanted to talk about in terms of offensive linemen that have a chance to start? Do you think that...
Yeah.
Okay, go.
The kid the Giants got.
Adam Bisnawani?
Yes.
In like the seventh round? You think he's going to find his way to right tackle there?
He could. That's the sad part. He really
that would
could.
Be sad. I don't think this guy is in any position to start as a rookie and make a
meaningful
impact.
He could start at guard.
And who are they going to push over to right tackle?
They're all terrible. It doesn't really matter.
They're all terrible.
Bobby Hart or, you know.
I think Ethan Posick should start right away in Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
Ethan Posick, who was, in my opinion, the best center in college football this year, and I think that I'm glad he went in the second round. I think that he could have been pushed up boards. This guy is a 6'5", like 320-pound center. He was recruited as a left tackle to LSU. He wanted to get on the field early, so he learned how to play center, and he just kind of owned the position, so they never moved him back, even after guys like Gerald Hawkins and Vidal Alexander left for the NFL previously. I think Ethan Posick has a chance to play at any of the five spots for the Seahawks, whether it be left tackle, guard, center, or right tackle if they decide to move Jermaine Ifedi. Was Jermaine Ifedi playing guard mostly last year?
I saw him mostly at tackle, but I think he might have played some guard.
He definitely played both guard and tackle. I can't imagine that he didn't.
I always saw him at
that offensive line. That offensive line was a horror show. I did want to mention him, and I wanted to mention one more guy, two more guys. I'll do it quickly. Arizona drafted Dorian Johnson. I think Dorian Johnson's very similar to Danny Isadora with some more upside. And coming from the Pitt offense, he's prepared for a pro-style system. Not that Arizona really runs a totally pro-style system with pulling guards and moving people, but I think that David Johnson will appreciate him in the run game. And Taylor Moten to Carolina. Yeah. I think Carolina just needs talent along the offensive line. And I think Moten is a day one starter at guard or right tackle for them.
I agree.
Even though Matt Khalil's still a left tackle, so they're only going to go so far. Even worse than the offensive line in this draft. And I think that we didn't say this originally, but after really looking at it, it was worse. The interior defensive line talent was horrendous.
It was like two guys. And that was
maybe not horrendous in terms of talent, if you want to consider Malik McDowell, Montrevious Adams, guys like that, as really good players with some character issues. But they just weren't.
I think those are the two guys that are outplay their draft position. I think
they better.
Malik McDowell, like a lot of people talked about him coming out of Michigan State, who just gave up on the season because they weren't going anywhere. I think if he's motivated, and you know, money is a great motivator, playing in the NFL is a great motivator, so maybe he outplays his position. Montrevious Adams is, I don't know, I just think he's not, he wasn't motivated at Auburn. I just think he just didn't care. And, I mean, if you can properly motivate those guys, they've got the talent, they've got the intangibles. I mean, I don't see why they can't be. I'm not gonna say they're starters though.
I mean, Montrevious Adams, Green Bay, they've found a way to get the most out of those guys on rookie contracts, and if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, they're fair to move on. Malik McDowell, if he didn't go to the Seahawks, I'd be really down on him. Maybe the Seahawks can get something out of him because it's a good organization, and that those leaders on the defense hold people accountable. Plus they're winning, which I think hopefully will help Malik McDowell, at least in terms of his motivation. And that's not great, but I really don't care if you would be unmotivated if you weren't winning, as long as we're winning and you're motivated. Because it doesn't affect me. It's like a hypothetical.
Right.
So if he comes in, like, I guess I would be worried, like, oh, what happens 3 years from now if
we have a bad season?
Yeah. Well, that doesn't bother me if he's playing well now. So I want to give him that credit. I also like Natsir Jones at UNC for Seattle. And I think he has a real chance to just be a solid rotation guy in that defense. Some other guys. I really like DeMarcus Walker in Denver, even though I'm seemingly the only person in the world who likes DeMarcus Walker sometimes. At least
yeah, I don't
it feels
like
that way.
Florida State. That's why I don't like him. Great. But no, but in Denver, I think I don't think he's going to get a lot of playing time.
I think that it's impossible to keep that guy off the field. I get it, but I think that he'll jump into that Malik Jackson role. He's not going to beat out Derek Wolfe, but he's such a similar player to Derek Wolfe. I mean, he'll just find snaps, and I think he makes the most out of them. I'm not sure that he's a high-level pass rusher that he was in college. He was either tied or – I think he was tied for the lead in sacks in the nation. He had 15 and a half sacks, probably like 14 and a half of them against the Hurricanes.
It feels like it. Especially
maybe 12. He must have had four, three and a half or four against Ole Miss.
Oh yeah. Plus, you know, he had less against the Hurricanes because he was too busy tipping that field goal that we ended up losing.
Seemed a little butthurt about it.
A little bit.
I think that he's an under the radar guy. Talking about an far from under the radar guy. I was gonna say over the radar. No, I thought about it and I was like, oh, I'll say over the radar and it'll be interesting. But I feel like it was
lame. Could start something.
I don't want to. That's not the one I want to start. I'll start something else. Jonathan Allen had a lot of. I mean, we were talking about him as like a third, second overall, fourth overall guy. He falls to 17. That's based on the medical. That's based on the lack of high end athleticism. Where do you think he falls in terms of his NFL production?
I think he's going to be fine. I think he rushes the passer really well. Whenever, like, I see a guy that drops because of a medical, that kind of makes me worry about the NFL team, because doesn't that say that your medical staff isn't good enough to get this guy healthy and on the field? So if your medical staff, if they can make sure he's healthy, and it's guys get hurt. Like I don't think there's any player that comes into the NFL as a rookie, and they're all unhealthy. They're all dinged up. They all have injuries. So it's like, I think you can't deny his talent. The Superman sack is all you needed to see, and it'd be like, yeah, that guy's an athlete. That guy's gonna rush the passer, and he's gonna play the run really well. I think he's gonna be fine.
I don't know, because I never know what the medicals. Some of these Alabama medicals have been significantly worse than like other teams' medicals. And I don't know what Saban does to these players.
He does the Belichick thing.
He gets the most out of them while they're at Alabama. So it might be as bad as people think. And I'm a little bit worried that he wasn't even close to being a dominant athlete. But, I mean, he was great. Yeah. He was so great in college in so many different roles. I still have faith in him that he's going to come out and be a really above-average starter for a long time. Houston drafted Carlos Watkins, a big name because he's from Clemson, but he also had some sneaky ability, and I think he had a little bit more upside than someone picked with a 142nd pick. You know, you might expect to possess. Eddie Vanderdoes is a guy who I really liked. He went to Oakland. We talked about this before, not in love with Oakland's draft because Gary and Conley, the off-the-field issues that came up right before the draft, mm-hmm. Not saying they're true, not saying they're false, but they were concerning.
Of course.
Obi Melifonwu, workout warrior, had some very concerning tape in terms of his ability to want to hit and the ability whether he was a really great range free safety. Their fourth-round pick was David Sharp, a guy who was borderline undrafted, according to some people, because of some of his limitations. Eddie Vanderdoes, like a solid player with not a ton of upside because he doesn't rush the passer. I think that I really like him, but I really like Gary and Conley. I kind of like David Sharp. I kind of like Obi Melifonwu, but I feel like all these guys have very high potential to not give you anything. And I couldn't. If the Raiders go 0-4 in this draft, it was just very concerning to me. I don't know how you feel about that.
As far as the Obi pick, I think that I think he'll be fine because he's got players around him that can kind of guide him in the right direction. We saw they took what's his name last year. Carl Joseph, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think, you know, with having Khalil Mack on the defense and, you know, having they've got enough guys in the locker room that I think can guide him in the right direction. Maybe get him a little more aggressive in terms of hitting. I think he'll be fine. I didn't hate the Raiders draft as much as
I was just worried about it.
No, yeah.
I was just worried about it, and
I think if Conley, if all these allegations kind of go away, that's a great. It's a great
Conley's pick. Great pick. You're right. If we said that 4 weeks before the draft, Conley 24 to the Raiders, you would have said, "What a steal!"
Yeah,
can't believe he fell. Jahlil Johnson to Minnesota. I think that he has. If Sharif Floyd really doesn't come back from this injury, I think Jahlil Johnson. I mean, he's not Sharif Floyd, but at least the Vikings addressed a possible need issue. Just like I was impressed the way they got Pat Elflin, Danny Zadora. Great that they got Dalvin Cook. The Vikings made sure that, despite not having a first-round pick, that this draft wasn't going to sink them.
Right.
They're going to at least stay afloat. I also wanted to give you the floor for a moment to talk about Dalvin Tomlinson and what he might bring to the Giants' defensive line rotation, or whether he will crack that rotation.
I'm glad you said that. And rookie minicamp's been done. I think he's going to not only crack the rotation, I think he's going to get significant playing time. I've heard that he's been watching a lot of Snacks Harrison, and he wants to play just as physical as he does. A lot of people talk about how, you know, he's been very impressive in rookie minicamp. That doesn't mean a whole lot, but I mean it's something. So,
perfect way to finish this off. Solomon Thomas,
what's he been doing? I haven't heard anything about him, but I haven't really been paying attention. Yeah.
He went third overall to the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah.
Do you know anything? Do you have any comments?
Don't know anything about him. We talked about it earlier. I'm always confused as to how guys rise up draft boards, and we're gonna talk a little bit about it later on. But like the NBA draft lottery was last night, and people are talking about Jonathan Isaac. I don't know anything about the guy. Like, he's the Solomon Thomas of the NBA draft at this point. And
that's such an excellent comparison. I don't know. Like, it's a guy, like, he's been on the radar just this year. Like, he wasn't on the radar coming into the year.
Yeah.
Until, like, listen, we've known about Lonzo Ball for 3 years. We've known about Markelle Fultz for a while. Josh Jackson was a big guy coming to Kansas. Like, Jonathan Isaac, kind of, like, right before this year, they're like, watch out for Jonathan Isaac this year.
And nobody said why.
Nobody said why. They're just like, watch out for him. And nobody wanted to watch Florida State basketball.
Right.
Even though they were like, what, a 3 seed in the tournament? Really, they were good.
But if you told me before the beginning of the season, yo, who would you watch out for in Florida State? I would be like, Dwayne Bacon. That's the guy. He's a shooting guard. He's even in the high school stuff. Like in.
It's not the NBA draft podcast.
No, I know.
I get the point.
But like, Solomon Thomas went to what school?
Stanford.
See, okay.
I can't believe you
asked
what school. You're terrible.
I'm terrible. I have no idea what I'm talking about. But like, okay, if you ask me before the season, all right, you're watching Stanford tape, who are you looking for? I'm not looking for Solomon Thomas. I'm not.
It's right, because you're a redshirt sophomore. It didn't really blow up his freshman year. I didn't do any most of these guys that were, you know, even, you know, your Jamal Adams, who were young players, like I had done some film work on them between the 2016 NFL draft and the beginning of the college football season. Like, Solomon Thomas wasn't even on my radar until he officially declared for the draft. And right. I'm like, I can't believe this guy's declaring for the draft. I had seen him once in Mitch Trubisky's bowl game tape. Yeah. And that's about it. And I had to go back. And you want to know what? I still don't see it. I see the athleticism. Right. I didn't see third overall.
You remember?
I think he'll be fine. I don't know if he's an edge defender. I don't know what he does, but I'm sure he'll
last
be fine.
Last year, when we were talking about this year's draft, and we were talking about guys who could rise up, there was a guy we were talking about, Michigan wide receiver, Jay Huchesson. We were talking about, was it Jay Huchesson? Like, he had a great stretch.
I was kind of in. He had a four-game stretch that I loved. Yeah.
And then, you know, when Michigan started the season, I was going to watch for Jabril Peppers and everybody like that. But I was really looking forward to watching Jay Huchesson because I was trying to see, you know, if he'd continue what he did. When people started talking about Solomon Thomas, I went back and looked at stats from the end of the previous season, hoping to see maybe that, he had like a stretch of 3 or 4 games where he was dominant. I didn't see it. So fast forward now, he's drafted San Francisco.
Third,
right, because they moved back. I think that he's going to start because you don't draft a guy third overall and not start him. But I think he'll produce. I think playing alongside Arik Armstead and DeForest Buckner, who are going to, you know, command some attention from offensive lines, I think that's going to help Solomon Thomas get to the quarterback. I'm not saying he's going to have a great year, but he should have some solid production. He's not going to have a Joey Bosa year, but I think...
He's on Joey Bosa.
He's not yet.
He's his own guy, and I think that he could carve out a role for himself as an interior pass rusher. He'll probably play a Michael Bennett-type role in Seattle in San Francisco, using Seattle's model of defense that they're bringing over. He'll rush a little to the inside, rush a little to the outside. I don't know if he does that all as a rookie, but by year 2 or 3, he'll probably take on that role. Listen, Michael Bennett was an undrafted guy who I think is one of the best defensive players in the NFL. Solomon Thomas has way more athleticism than him. If he has, you know, just enough of the mental aspect and the will to do it, being a Stanford guy, I assume that he has some of that.
He's got to be kind of smart.
I think he has a chance to be really good.
Yeah. All right.
But that's it. Like, do we have anybody that – did you say anybody in a way that made you feel like you were talking about a Pro Bowler other than me talking about Forrest Lamp? Probably Solomon Thomas is the other guy, and neither of us are that high on him. But right. I would say that he does have some potential down the line.
Right.
Not a ton of star power here.
Nah, what about Adam Bisnawati? I think.
And Danny Isidora. Giants and Hurricanes.
Yeah, yeah.
You should just call it the Giants and Hurricanes podcast, Stan. Then you would get better reviews.
I think that's what I should do. All right.
That's it. We're going to come back with an NBA lottery themed mock draft.
Get up to possibly.
All right, Stan. The NBA lottery just happened. Celtics have the first overall pick, even though they are
currently getting destroyed by the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, I was going to say they're down 0-1 by the time you're listening to this after a horrific beatdown, unless Isaiah Thomas scores 45 in the fourth quarter and brings them back. As a fellow coastal elite like myself, you have any hopes for the Knicks at number 8?
No, not a one.
No hopes, okay.
Because they're going to screw it up. Either De'Aaron
Fox. Markelle Fultz falls to them at 8.
I would love that. Yeah. It's not going to happen.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so. I don't know what gives me that feeling, but I think Markelle Fultz is not going to fall to 8. I don't think anybody's going
to
fall to 8.
Who do the Knicks send to the lottery? I don't even know.
Who was it? It was, I know who it was. It was, whoever Phil Jackson, is the guy that Phil Jackson is like, this is my right-hand guy.
Karamis?
Another right-hand guy. He was with him, he was a scout with him with the Bulls. I forgot his name. Craig something.
I don't care.
All right.
What we did here for our little bit of fun that we're going to have at the end of this episode, we went with the picks 1 through 14 in the order that the lottery came up. And we were just who we would have sent if that was the organization. I think I mentioned this. It had to be somebody different from who they actually sent.
Right.
And we're just going to go back and forth. Who we would have sent for whatever reason, and I guess, and why.
All right.
You ready?
Yeah.
So the Celtics,
yeah,
who had the first pick, they sent owner White Gross back. Couldn't send anybody from the team. They are busy playing the Cleveland Cavaliers in the finals.
Getting demolished in the playing the finals.
It is what it is.
Yep.
They didn't need a good luck charm because the lottery was rigged for them, or they
pick. Yep, it was rigged.
But just in case, send the golden boy Tom Brady. Boston couldn't get luckier than Brady's gotten over the years.
Okay. He'll show up with like a cup of Dunkin' Donuts because apparently they love it up there. Number two, I've got L.A. I'm sending Zooey Deschanel. She's fun. She's bubbly. I think it's good to send a woman after what LeVar Ball just said. Although I think, ironically, it'd be kind of funny if they did send LeVar.
I think that LeVar should have been the choice. Magic Johnson is the best choice. LeVar Ball would have been the second best choice. I think we can both agree on that.
I think it would have been entertaining.
The 76ers, they have the third pick. Plenty of great Philly legends they could have sent. But as a peace offering, the Philadelphia 76ers send Sam Hinkie. Joel Embiid was great. I wouldn't take away seeing Joel Embiid at the draft lottery.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can't send him, Hinkie's the guy.
Number four. I'm sending Kamiko Glenn, who plays So-So on Orange is the New Black, because I couldn't think of anybody from Phoenix except for like the ghost of Pat Tillman. So
that works.
That works.
I like her. She's nice. She's cool. She's good.
Yeah.
She's good on that show.
Yeah.
She's a little... Wait, she plays Brooke, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Brooke So-So. Yeah, you're a fan.
I'm a fan. All right. I've been there before. The Kings.
The first of two picks.
The first pick, they send former governor who spent some time in Sacramento, the capital city.
That makes sense.
That's right. That's my geography. Arnold Schwarzenegger. He gives them some respectability.
That makes sense. All right. I've got Orlando.
That's correct.
At five. I'm going the lead singer of Creed, Scott Stapp. I think it'd be great. Not only that, I think they should let him announce the pick at the draft so that he can say with the, sixth pick in the NBA draft, the Orlando Magic select whoever, and then he'll be like, we accept him with arms wide open.
Well done.
Thank you.
Excellently executed.
Thank you. I needed to get that Creed joke out.
Gotta do it. Okay. should do more Creed jokes. Next week we do a big board of all Creed jokes.
Creed song? Oh, yeah.
Creed jokes. Number seven, the Timberwolves. They, just like the Kings sent a former governor, the Timberwolves sent a former governor of Minnesota, Jesse the Body Ventura, along with the theme of the NFL draft. Win if you can, lose if you must, but always cheat.
I like it.
Jesse Ventura gives them a great chance at getting the number one pick by cheating.
Another great voice. He should announce the pick of the draft, too. Number eight, our New York Knicks. Well, mine, I don't know about you. You're a Knicks fan?
Yes.
Yeah, sadly. Unfortunately. Yeah. No shot we get anybody we want. So might as well make this fun. Send Michael Rapaport.
He'll keep me entertained the entire time.
Right? I think they got to get the dump button ready, though. He's definitely going to curse.
Well, yeah. Let's liven up the draft a little bit.
I agree.
All right. I got Dallas Mavericks, number nine. They were trying to do something with him after he recently retired, to maybe get him into an NBA game as a stunt. Weren't able to do it. Instead, they let him go to the NBA draft. He got injured. Dak Prescott, he gets to call the pick instead. It's his team now.
I agree.
It's his team now.
Not only that, he should find a way to get hurt, and then Dak takes over.
Tony Romo will have to be there, and somebody will have to hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
To get Cam Chancellor to... that. The Knicks will send Charles Oakley, and Charles Oakley will give him a cheap shot. You got the Kings with their second pick. They get two representatives.
So they've already got Arnold.
And I think that, I think that my representative should arm wrestle your representative to see who's the best representative.
All right, I like that. It still makes it tough. I don't know who I'd want to pick here because I have two of them. I got Sam Elliott, the voice of the Coors Light commercials, that deep, raspy voice. I think he'd be a great candidate to arm wrestle Arnold. But then there's Sasha Gray. I think Arnold will take it easy on her.
We're going to move on. I am going to give you the 11th pick. Is that where we are?
Yeah.
11th pick. for the team I very recently thought was the Bobcats and not the Hornets. Michael Jordan's team. Uh-huh. And I wanted to, you know, pick somebody petty that Michael Jordan might have wanted to embarrass, such as Clyde Drexler or Muggsy Bogues or Chameleon Air or his high school coach that cut him. But instead, I look back to the time in his life when he needed something good to happen while he was playing baseball / suspended for gambling. 1996, Space Jam came out, grossed $250 million internationally, the third highest grossing sports movie of all time behind Rocky IV and The Blind Side.
I'm actually a little surprised Blind Side is that high.
Michael Jordan sends Bugs Bunny. Oh. Bugs Bunny to...
Does he bring the secret stuff?
Brings the secret stuff. Hornets have a real chance. If you won't allow a cartoon character, he sends Danny DeVito and gets him back for trying to set him to Moron Mountain. Pistons at number 12. It's you.
Detroit. Pistons at number 12. I was thinking Eminem. He embodies Detroit. You know, one of their more famous rappers. But I wanna give him somebody with a little hope. I'm going to send Jerome Bettis.
It's an uplifting choice. Mm-hmm. Real great role model for mm-hmm. the city, probably. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know anything about Jerome Bettis' life.
I saw his NFL thing. It seemed pretty good. I don't know.
Great. Great. Excellent analysis of Jerome Bettis' NFL thing.
This is why B-Mars 3 thinks I'm terrible.
I have the Denver Nuggets, number 13. I'm sending Matt Stone and Trey Parker.
Great choice.
Stalwarts of the Colorado community.
What a great choice.
And they don't have much of a chance, so might as well have some fun with it.
I love that so much. Almost as much as I love this one. I've got Miami at 14. They're sending Pitbull.
All right. I'm so impressed that you didn't pick one of the thousands of Hurricanes. I
thought about it. And then I found out some guys that from Miami.
Moistening up, yeah. Thinking about.
I recently found out there are guys that from Miami didn't go to Miami, and it bothers me a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure. We're not going to let you take over this.
Right. But Pitbull is a great choice.
Do you have a Pitbull joke?
I don't, but I'm sure he'll say, again, another guy that could represent them. The NBA should do that. Instead of having the commissioner do it, just like the NFL, give him a round to announce the picks. I would love to hear Pitbull say, with the 14th pick, whatever, Dali. Or something along those lines. Mr. 305. Mr. Worldwide. That's my pick.
This has been the NFL Draft Podcast. I'm at Rob DeRay.
I'm at Funny Man Stan.
Keep giving us reviews. Tell us we're terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
I thrive off that criticism.
And just don't forget, B-Mars 3, I don't do this for a living. I do many things terribly for a living. This is not one of them.
This is specifically for your enjoyment.
Yeah. This is... I love talking about football. I don't do that. I get... some money for it, but like, I don't. If I did this for a living, I'd be eating out of cans for the rest of my life.
I don't think you could afford cans.
You're right. Still fun though.
It's been the NFL Draft Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at NFL Draft Podcast. You can email us at draftpodcast@gmail.com.
We got it.
We're on a roll now. We'll see you next week.